Friends, you have heard that the subject of our lecture today is Can the Dead Communicate? And kind of pointed questions were raised by the first speaker, which all need to be addressed. And as was indicated, for someone who has lost the near and dear one, particularly when it is an untimely death, the desire to communicate with the dear departed is pretty natural. One has an intent, is a desire to establish this communication because all of us have that feeling that death cannot really terminate life in this manner. Also, our religions, they speak of spirit of man carrying on after death. It said that the spirit perhaps waits for the judgment day, or perhaps it enters into Swarga or goes to Narka or hell and remains there for a period in proportion to their merit or demerit, and after that they are reborn. Now this is the fact with which if we really inquire that why should then we desire really to communicate with the dead, we should also ask ourselves a question that while we have intense desire perhaps to communicate with our dead, do they in turn have the desire to communicate with us? And if someone says that yes, they have the desire, they should ask themselves that out of millions and millions of deaths happening every year, how many cases are heard of actually dead coming back and communicating with us? They are very few in number and totally insignificant. And having understood that this number is indicative of something very solemn, why this is so? The thing is that the dead person is not the person whom you knew as your wife, child, husband, friend, relative, or whatnot. That person is really not Mr. X, Mrs. Y, but he or she is really, truly speaking, the spirit within. And this spirit, mature, it, as was indicated in Bhagavad Gita's meaning, it takes up bodies after bodies, sometimes male, sometimes female, in poor or rich or any circumstances. To what? For what? To garner experience from life, learn necessary lessons, extract whatever life has in store to teach, and then, when the purpose is clearly served, move on to take maybe another birth in another body. This is really the fact of the matter. And the cases, however, people will say that we do hear a lot of people actually not coming back and communicating. These are some of the exceptions. Theosophy doesn't say that they cannot communicate. But if at all any communication happens, these are the cases of exceptions. When does this happen? We are told that when the person who has died has got some very intense unfulfilled desire, when the person has got something very important to communicate to someone who is on the side of death, as it were, then what happens is that instead of moving on to Devanam or Narka or whatever, he remains awake. He remains in the earth's atmosphere and makes contact with the living by various means. And that's why in the first quotation in your handout, see what HBP says. She says that during few days that follow immediately the death of a person and before the ego passes into Devanam state, when the intensity of the desire in the dying person to return for some purpose, note the word, for some purpose, forced the higher consciousness to remain awake, and therefore it was individuality, the spirit that communicated. In all other cases, we can say that spirit is dazed after death and falls very soon into what we call pre-devahani unconsciousness. And we can maybe give an example of such a purpose keeping the person awake and making communication or establishing communication. In a book called Airmen Who Would Not Die by John Fuller, there are three major incidences reported. These are two stories, two cases actually, and very well investigated and very well researched. In this, what happens in the very first case is that there is an airman, Captain Enfield. He, along with a very wealthy lady, is making an attempt to make a transatlantic flight. Now this is during the time when aviation industry had not matured, where such transatlantic flights were not normal, not heard of. He is attempting this flight. Obviously there are dangers involved. Nobody has really tried. And so this lady actually wanting to make as if a name for herself, she promises to this captain that I will pay you and some money for making this flight and also insure you so that your non-working pilot and two young children, they will be taken care of in case the worst happened. And what happened? Of course, the weather was unfavorable. They had to change the course. They ran out of fuel, and the aircraft crashed into the water. And both these persons, they died of drowning. And obviously the widow waited for the news. Having not heard anything, kindly approached the insurance agency and also bought the paycheck which was promised by this wealthy lady. Unfortunately, there was no insurance. There was no paycheck. Now imagine the anxiety she was facing. She and the two young children, they were facing death by starvation in the long run. And it's after almost 1.5 months that Captain Hinkley makes attempts to establish contact with his wife through mediums. He comes through and makes this contact and he says that I can understand, I can see your anxiety, I can see the financial difficulty that you are going through, and he says that I will be with you till this financial matter is sorted out. This is also very important. And of course, he goes on to tell her as to who all she should be contacting and how to build the public pressure on the father of this wealthy lady to part this promised money by his own daughter. And of course, the money comes to him on the very day that was predicted by Captain Hinkley to his wife. And not only that, he did something very important. He shared some very valuable information, which was of course technical in its nature, but which would be very valuable for the infant aviation industry in making this long distance flight. So you see, at least two important purposes are coming out. He was concerned about the financial crisis in which the family was, and also wanted to share this information. And of course, people would also have heard of many other cases of similar nature. And also, you find there are many cases in which the person who is dying has suddenly appeared before their friend, their relative, or whoever, but in a place pretty far off from where the death is taking place. And, you know, they might be looking as though, you know, some blood might be running out, they might be disfigured or dripping or water might be dripping through them. They are actually dying. And at that moment, they make appearance to their near and dear one. How does this happen? Again, we are told that this happens because there is this intense desire on the part of the dying person to be with the near and dear one or maybe to communicate something. And that's what in your second quotation is indicated. It says that if he, that is the If he thinks very intently at the moment of death of a person, he either is very anxious to sleep or loves best, he may appear to that person. The thought becomes objective, the Dhamma, astral body, being nothing but a faithful reproduction of him, like a reflection in mirror. That which a man does, even in thought, that the Dhamma repeats. This is why the phantoms are often seen in such cases in clothes they wear at the particular moment, and the image reproduces even the expression on the dying man's face. When a man who has been drowned appears to his friend, the image will be seen to be dripping with water. Now, these are basically the exceptional cases in which such kind of contact of the dead with the living happens. In most other cases, we can safely say that they are either the cases of fraud or the cases not of the real spirit of man, the real man establishing contact, but just the discarded remains, clones discarded, as Bhagavad Gita says, discarded remains, boot, shell, ghost, we might have all heard about it. These things kind of make contact and, you know, appear to us and make us feel that we are meeting our loved one. But these exceptions, have you seen that all the rest of the cases are permanent? We are therefore told not to indulge in these practices. Spiritualistic practices, holding of seance to call the near departed. These practices are nothing else but necromancy, worship of the dead, against which enough warnings are shown in Hindu literature. And in fact, Moses, he said that witches should be put to death if they are found indulging in such practices. And so, why this sort of danger is there? Why such a, what you call, opposition is there to such practices? Something seems to be appearing. Why this opposition? And for that, we have to understand what is really man. What is his constitution? What happens to him after death? What happens at death? The doctor will pronounce the person based on whatever pulse and breath and the state of health or the vital organs. And he will declare the person, now this is just clinical health. At that time, we are told that the inner man, the spirit, the ego, is undergoing a very solemn process of what is called as review. Entire lives, happenings, in its minutest details, all of the thoughts, feelings, interactions, they pass like a film before the mind's eye and leave an indelible impression on the mind of this dying person. And at the end of it, what happens is that the higher principles of man, we know that there is Atma, there is Buddhi, there is Manas, the thinking principle, and also desires and passions. These they separate out from the physical body, the design body called the astral body, and of course the prana. This separation takes place after this review. Review may take a few moments, a few hours, but after that, this separation marks the actual death, after which that dead person cannot be revived. And after that, what happens? These higher principles, we said Atma, Buddhi, Manas, and desires and passions, they go, as it were, to another sphere. Now, this is absurd. You can say they fall into another state of consciousness called Kamaloka. It's all here, pervading. This Kamaloka is not up there somewhere in Pakala. It's right here. It's a state of consciousness. So this higher principles of man, they fall into the state of Kamaloka, and there, again, something important happens. That is another death that takes place. All of us are part good, part bad. None of us are so saintly that there is nothing evil in us. And so, at that time, after getting into Kamaloka, the separation, segregation of our good from the bad takes place. All that we aspire to do, our desire to help the suffering people, our kindness, our love, our charity, justice, generosity, our aspirations to be of immense help to other people, our love for extra arts such as music, painting, sculpting, all these are very, very noble aspirations, noble things. They have the roots of the spiritual nature of life. And so they attach themselves to this higher two principles of Atma and Buddhi, and kind of it's a purification process that has happened. That's why Kamaloka is not purgatory, where this all the bad is discarded. And in the purgatory, this new entity, as it were, arises. This is kind of a fetus, you can say, which is there now, from which a new ego will eventually take birth. And what happens to that which was purely worldly nature, our selfish desires, our passions, our inhumanity to other people, our cruelty, our egoistic nature, and all those lower things, we are told, along with the lower desires and passions, they combine with an aspect of astral body to form shell, host, spoon, whatever you call it. Why shell? Because all that was good in man has left, and what remains is just the shell. There is only the lower part of man's nature. However good may the main man may be, it's just the bad part of it which is really making this shell. And then, having seen that this is the second death, one wonders how long this person or entity will stay in this state. We are told that it may take from few moments to even few years. This entity may be there in this Kamaloka, that, you know, well, you can say the fetal ego and its shell may remain there for this long period. But luckily, for an average group of people like you and me, this period is not very long. And the ego emerges from that state quickly and ascends to Devahan, heaven, or Swarga, or whatever you call it. But if at this time, after death of the person, some people, you know, they have a desperate desire to make contact. If they are conducting seance, then it is possible to attract this fetal and shell and entity to seance room. But they are unconscious. What happens is that in their presence, the thoughts and ideas that we have about the dear departed, they just get reflected through the medium. And we feel that it is our dear departed who is there. But in the process, what are we doing? We are disturbing the fetal ego. It's as bad as disturbing the fetus in mother's womb. We are disturbing the near departed. They are preparing to emerge into heaven, and we are, as such practices, we are disturbing. And that is why we are told not to emerge into this, and that is why in our religions, after that ceremonies, do they have any purpose? Do they have any efficacy? The whole philosophy behind that being that it should help the entity which is now in Kamaloka to quickly pass on to the heaven world and not get attracted to the bad atmosphere of Siyansomi, so that it will protect this near departed. And also, during ceremony, what is done? People typically would give away the belongings of the dear departed to the Brahmin or someone needy. And also, one would cook food which the dear one liked, and also give away the objects that were very dear to him, lest that desire, that attachment, would hold back the ego from departing from the Kamaloka. That is the significance which is there. And the purpose why we do it, not to get them back, but to enable them to move on. So, seance practices are really crying against our own near and dear ones. Now, Now what happens? As we said, for average good person, they do not get attracted, and luckily we don't indulge in those things. So they depart and they wake up to the joys of heaven, swarga, paradise, or whatever you want to call it. It's a state, again, it's not a place, it's a state of consciousness in which there is absolutely no recollection of the fact that the person has died. It's a state full of happiness and peace and bliss in which the tired out person is resting. The person is surrounded by all the loved ones whom he lacked and loved intently during life and might have lost earlier. They all are kind of surrounding in the mentally created world by this dead person. And at that time, we are told that not a hint of suffering is there. It can happen that a wife has a very unfaithful husband on earth. She lived a miserable life while she was on earth, but when she goes there, what was her longing? But I should have a happy family, loving husband, and that's exactly what she will get. That's what she has created for herself. She will be surrounded by a husband who is doting on her. She will have children, and she will be in a paradise truly, where there is no recollection of the husband who was unfaithful. So this is the wonderful state which the person is in, and we want to drag the person down. We have to ask ourselves. And what happens? The mother who is, you know, very ideating on the children who are left behind on earth, her love, she is pouring out love, will be felt by people who are there on earth. See what the quotation number 3 says. It's a very potent, you know, quotation. It says, again, we say that love beyond prayer, illusion though you may call it, has a magic and divine potency which reacts on the living. A mother's ego, filled with love for the imagined children it sees near itself, living a life of happiness as real to it as when on earth, that love will always be felt by the children in flesh. It will manifest in their dreams and often in various events, in providential protections and escapes, for love is a strong shield and is not limited by space or time. As with this Devahani mother, so the rest of human relationships and attachments, say purely selfish or material. Now, after seeing what a happy state our dear one is in, still, if we indulge in this activity and think that we can drag down this happy entity to the foul atmosphere of Kamaloka, of our suffering, you know, which is there on the earth, we are mistaken. There are a lot of people who dabble in this Sinan's practices, our person comes from, or maybe ask silly questions, and they think, they in fact tell you that it's possible to summon who you ask, and you know, you will be able to do it. You can summon the spirit of Newton, Plato, Gandhi, Jesus, whatever you tell. We will be able to bring him in the circle, and you know, then you can ask questions and so on. Can the spirit be thus influenced? Can you imagine your own loved one caught by this mere, you know, dabblers in the necromancy and disturb their peace and bliss? This does not happen. This does not happen very, very in mind. What happens is that this entity is in such a peace and bliss that completely lost in that state cannot be reached by people who are there on earth. Imagine the misery the mother will feel if while she was a very happily married lady, happy and with her husband who was faithful. Now if we are able to drag her back to earth by these practices, she will be able to see that now her husband has married another woman and her children who are young are neglected, they are miserable. Will she remain happy anymore? Obviously not. It's in the nature scheme of things that you cannot disturb the person who is in that happy state. But something else can happen, and that is that if the medium through which such communications happen, if the person is not taking any money for such sittings, if the person is very pure and has a desire, has a prayer to help you out, then the spiritual part of this medium would ascend to the plane, the state of consciousness where your departed is in that happy world. And you will be able to see the vision of the happy world of your dear departed. Thoughts, ideas, the people who is surrounding this person, and would have the facility to repeat his thoughts and ideas, and you feel that it is your dear departed who is speaking. Actually, the person will have a resemblance also to the dear departed. Kind of a rapport, perfect rapport takes place, and the person will be, this medium will write in the hand of your dear departed and have the mannerism of your dear departed, but it is simply the person actually rising to that plane where your real loved one is, and simply kind of becoming a channel through which the communication as to what is happening there is reaching. It's not your dear departed who is dragged down very nice. And then the question may arise, but there are so many cases of people who say that just we have been able to get the spirit of so-and-so. What is it really which makes appearance in the seen and soul? The answer of theosophy is that it is not the spirit of man, not the real man who is already gone. What really appears in seen and soul is just the discarded remains, which is shell, wood, whatever you call it. And it may be shell of your dear departed, or worse, it could be shell, the wood of very evil entities called elementals. They actually masquerade as your dear departed and fool you. This is the danger. What comes to you is not your real one. It is just the discarded remains which are coming. But one may ask that, but when the questions are put, this person who comes, give answers all the questions, repeats all the incidences which are known just to me and the person. This, how does this become possible? It's a proof that our real one has come. Theosophy explains why, how this happens. The physical body has got a design body which is electromagnetic in its nature, and while we are living, all our thoughts, feelings, desires, all the things that happen in and around us have almost a photographic impression left on this astral body. Now, if this astral body, if it's somewhat like a gramophone record, if this can be made to give off these images or impressions, then it would say what the man did, thought, experienced, nothing new. That's exactly what happens during seance. These shells, they get attracted and get vivified by the, what you call as a vitality of the medium and sitters, and they get artificial life and begin to throw us these impressions. Appears to be very intelligent as if we are answering questions. But what is it? It's simply going towards the impressions which are left on the shell by the dear departed. He has already left, and we feel that it is the real man who is coming. Now, if these impressions are simply repeated, we have to ask ourselves that is it not something similar to what happens in the gramophone record? The symbol is not there. But when you put a gramophone record, perfectly, faultlessly, the whole song is reproduced. Is the singer really there anymore in that tape or gramophone? He's not there. And yet, this repetition happens. So this is what we have to bear in mind. It's just the throwing off of the impressions by the shell. And we are told that this evil entities, often called angel souls, controls, and so on, these evil entities, they take on big names. They will say, I am maybe Milton, Shakespeare, Jesus, and so on. But if you ask, maybe if you are Milton, please dictate some nice poem. Milton will dictate trash. Just make it very clear that Milton, it's not Milton, it's some other person impersonating and fooling. So this kind of cheating takes place. And then when people also, they get fooled sometimes. They say that, you know, in the music for Sinyas, some really hard things will be appearing. Seems to be giving out lofty teachings, expressing pure sentiments, talking about Brahman and so on. So therefore, it must be the real, spiritual, high entity, some kind of a, you know, very, very high person who seems to be coming when we conduct seance. Again, be not fooled by that. That also is no proof that the great being, whoever you think, whatever name they assume, some Swami, some Baba, whatever, don't get fooled. It's not proof that it is really the spiritual people. And remain very, keep it in your mind that truly spiritual people will never come to Sinyas room. It's a very, very foul atmosphere in which you will not find a pure spirit ever coming. So, what is it that is, as it were, making all these expressions of sentiments and telling all these things? We are told that it is really when sometimes the sitters who are trying to call this real party, they are pure in nature. And when the medium is also very pure, then what happens is that there is this less degraded aspect of this evil entities which sometimes come out. You can be a lion, you know, actually very, very hard-hearted, criminal and rascally person, but still have an intellectual appreciation of virtue, purity, and, you know, angriness and everything. Understand merely intellectually. But inside, you are out and out a very vicious and innately bad person. Now, if this aspect of intellectual appreciation, etc., is awakened, when the pure people are kind of making this contact, you feel it is something very high and noble, as it were, establishing contact with us. But it is this evil entity. And sooner or later, you know, you find that suddenly these spirits go out of hand and havocs are created. And it's a dangerous, dangerous thing. Now, so what happens? This shell, as we said, is having what? It's something which we have discarded. All that is selfish, bad, evil, terrible, cruel, in our nature, these are the things. And in fact, in Sinyas room, these entities, they flock this place. And they, therefore, as we said, they suck the vitality of the sitters, they weaken you physically as well as morally. So here is again a danger sign. It's a place one would not want to be in. And present also in this realm are the victims of violent deaths. Maybe death due to suicide, murder, execution, or even accident. In these people, it's an unnatural death. The normal lifetime has not perhaps ended. And so, these are called shades. These entities are also there in that Kamaloka. They have to remain in this atmosphere for the duration until the hour of death arrives. These are the ones, particularly the executed criminals and suicides, they are very, very potent. And executed criminal, now imagine, if this person is thrown off into that invisible atmosphere, he feels very aggrieved. He is full of anger and feeling of revenge towards people who actually tried him and finally executed him, put to death. He is rehearsing his crimes. He is having an intense desire to take revenge on the humanity, the society, which has kind of deprived him of the body. And these entities, they thrive in this atmosphere. These executed criminals and such entities. They would want to have that artificial life even for a brief period to live vicariously, artificially. also what happens is sometimes suicides. Those people who thought that by committing suicide all my troubles will be ended and I will be free from all these things which are so terrible and not there anymore. These suicides also, they, when after death get into the state, they are conscious of the realness that it's only the body which has gone. They are intact otherwise. And sometimes, regretfully, they regret that why did I commit this bad deed in which now I can't do anything. At least when the body was there, I could help my dear ones. I can't do anything. The body is gone. And they also sometimes get attracted and they want to have such vicarious life in the sinner's room. And therefore, if we are attracting such entities and enabling them to kind of, increase their human tendencies, like in case of the human criminals, or in our dear departed, in case of it is a suicide case, sadly, then you are actually helping them to create terrible karma. These murderers, these executed criminals, they try to inject thoughts of murder in the minds of those who are susceptible. And then suddenly you find there are many cases where people will say, something told me, go and murder this person, and I did it. I don't know. Something at that time, this sort of injecting of a thought happens from such entities. We should have nothing to do with this jhansu. And that is the lesson. And also, we have to remember that sometimes if our near one happens to have died through accidental death and he's going to be there for a very long period till the death of our ones, there's no need to worry that they will get drawn into siyasu and get this sort of vicarious life and so on. We are told that for an average person, what happens in case of accidents is the person falls into some kind of a rosy scene. He has very, very happy dreams of the people, of the family and so on. And also, sometimes they will be slumbering in a very, very deep sleep till the hour of death arises. So, for most of us, let's not worry because there's something very important that is happening there. If the person is averagely good, then their own spiritual principles of Atma and Buddhi are protecting this entity. They would not allow this entity to get attracted. And also, these people have got protection of the great people who are there in the invisible atmosphere. They would not get attracted. But by such practices, under the strong magnetic currents, you might commit this mistake. And so, in the quotation number 5, see what it says. It's a master of wisdom writing, saying that but it is a sin and cruelty to revive their memory and intensify their suffering by giving them a chance of living an artificial life, a chance to overload their karma by tempting them into open doors, mediums and sensitives. For they will have to pay roundly for every such pleasure. Such people, when they are reincarnated, they will have difficulty with their spiritual progress. And none of us would want to have that happen to the near and dear ones. This is coming from the Master of Wisdom and we can humbly submit and try to really pay heed to their advice. And then there are so many people who are indulging in these things just for fun. Every evening they will be sitting for coffee of the dead to ask maybe questions. To maybe ask questions of in what course thoughts to put their money or in what stock they should invest in and so on. Sometimes they are so trivial and useless questions. For all these things, they will be sitting for fun. It's not a fun thing at all. But there are people who think that it's just fun to call these spirits and indulge in these things. Some people follow this so-called near departed out of curiosity. They want to just see what is that that happens. Some they just want to see what is that phenomenon, how does it happen. For all this, again, a warning is given that one, if there is a pain medium, we are told that invariably the pain medium will never ascend to the heights of the dear departed, to the heaven world and many of the cities. That will not happen. This pain medium, invariably in the long run, is subjected to fraud, is tempted to commit fraud. This pain medium is the deranged person. This pain medium, therefore, is something we should again be remaining away from. And we are told that there is great danger, and that is brought out very well by Madame H. Lavesky in an article which is entitled A Case of Obsession. If people just go for out of curiosity or just to see what is happening, even that we are forbidden to do. Why? Because there is this case of an Englishman who went a couple of times for such seances, and then what happened was that he became mediumistic. He became slave to some such entities that he was made to speak and do things most disgusting to his waking nature, but and even though he tried to resist, but he could not. Why so? And see what again H.D. says in his quotation, how this sort of obsession can take place. We are told that near the earth's surface, there hangs over us a steamy morning of fog, composed of the undispersed exhalations of human vice and passion. This is Kamaloka. This fog penetrates the sensitivity to the very soul's core. His psychic self absorbs it as the sponge does water, or as fresh milk effluvia. It benumbs smaller senses, spurs his basal instincts into activity, overpowers his good resolutions, as the fumes of wine malt make the brain green, or as the choke tank stifles one's breath in a mine. So this heavy cloud of immoral influences carries away the sensitive beyond the limits of self-control, and he becomes obsessed. So there is danger for the dear departed, there is danger to us, and lesson of the moral is absolutely clear. And still, those who have lost their loved one, that loss is irreparable. They feel a void, they feel a longing. For them, there is a solace. We are told that those who love intently, we are told that they rise to that level of a person who is in Devaha and Swarga and communicate with the dear departed. It's only that we are not able to recollect. But sometimes we are able to feel that yes, our dear one is happy and everything is fine with him. That sort of feeling comes when we wake up, because in dream we are making such contact. And still, for those who feel that what happens now, when I've never seen my loved one, there is a real tremendous work given on the basis of doctrine of karma and reincarnation. See quotation in the 9. It's wonderful. It says, spiritual only love is immortal, and karma brings sooner or later all those who love each other with such spiritual affection to incarnate once more in the same family room. So you will be meeting again. There is hope. Nothing is really lost. As he is carrying on journey, you carry on, you meet again in some future incarnation. And those who have this bond last at least for 3 times, as Sacha Moka Bandhan, is not just a platitude, it's a reality. Friends, now there's some 5 minutes for asking your questions on the subject of voluntary.
I was just wondering, you were saying that we can communicate with the dead
question is again a practical one, and student is not really competent in that sense to answer the profound question. That we said that during sleep we actually meet our dear departed. So what is it that happens? Is it that astral body kind of rises to the plane of Devaha and communication is where it takes place? You can just imagine that in sleep, what happens? The body is very much lying on the bed, assuming, you know, funny posture sometimes. But the real inner man goes to God knows what all places. You might go to New York, or you might go to Himalayas, and all these places. It's your thought body, which is kind of vibrating in unison with your near departed, and with that vibration, this is where it is happening. There is a, what we call a rapport established, and that rapport is really difficult to establish and to understand when you love one another. Doesn't it happen during lifetime that a husband and wife, they will be having a lot of guests, but they will be just exchanging a glance when something is said, and they understand one another exactly without uttering a word. That sort of rapport. Now imagine that there is no internal physical body which is there. That sort of rapport takes place, and as, you know, kind of Mayavi Rupa, or what you call your astral, which is not a gross astral, but it's a thought body. You know, there is material. That is the thing which is vibrating in unison with the dear departed. And if one catches electronic things, you can have wireless communication, you can understand. That, you know, your mobile, there's no wire running. And still, person can feel it. The, you know, vibrations are going only into the internet or some whatever satellite and coming to you. It could be, of course, through the fiber channel and so on. Wireless communication, you get some idea. This is the subtle upper vibration through which you are contacting the neighbor. So this is very important, that we are not doing this consciously. This happens unconsciously, and we have not really trained our mind so that when we wake up, we are able to remember and describe what all we saw or what all we heard. But there is a feeling that comes to you that all is well. The dead one is in a peace and bliss and really taking rest, and I need not worry about the dead. Friends, our time is up, and if you have any question after the meeting, you can come up and we can discuss.